Welcome to the Startup Addict Podcast. I'm Nick Swinburne. I've been starting companies for over 20 years now. I've had some big successes, like Zappos.com, and lots of failures. Regardless of the outcome, I'm still convinced there's nothing more addicting than trying to turn ideas into reality.
All right, welcome to episode 2 of the Startup Addict. I'm Dennis Rodriguez. With us is also Julio Lara and Nick Swimmer.
Julio, known as The Plug. Anything you'd like to plug, Julio?
Yes, I would like to plug the Run JMMC podcast on iTunes, Google Play.
And what was the exciting news you just found on your phone?
The Infinity War trailer drops tomorrow. I'm stoked. Awesome. We lost to talk about next episode, so tune in. Thank you.
Well, if we had an audience, we just lost them.
Yeah, no, we didn't.
All right, so what do we...
We're talking about the Warriors. How are we going to lose audiences based on talk today?
We're not. Warriors is always interesting.
Yes. So we should probably just start real basic. And why the Warriors?
So the Warriors, for me, has always been an obsession, right? So I moved to America from England when I was 7. And right before we moved, my dad, he came on an advanced trip for a couple weeks or however long he came for. And he came back to England with two big buttons, you know, like the metal buttons you'd like pin on your shirt.
Yeah.
Like oversized. These things are probably
like those politicians.
4 or 5 inches. Yeah. And one was a Golden State Warriors logo and one was a Houston Rockets logo. So I was like a soccer crazed kid in England. I'd never even really heard of basketball. But for whatever reason, I could still picture just staring at those buttons. I was like mesmerizing these logos that had come from America. And I was like, what are these? And he's like, I went to a basketball game and I got these buttons. And so I was just hooked, right? So as soon as we got over here, I was like, well, where are the Warriors? Where are the Rockets? And my dad's like, well, the Rockets are kind of far away, but the Warriors are your local team. So I was like, oh, I just want to go to a game, right? So we started going to games and
And you never actually watched basketball before this. This was...
No, in England, I don't think it was... At that time, there was no cable and all that, so yeah. It wasn't on. But it was, I was just hooked. Like whatever it was about going to the arena, and the excitement, and I think there's something different about an indoor sport, and such a fast-paced game and all that. I just love Sleepy Floyd. And
do you remember where you sat?
I remember we sat. I don't know where we sat always, but I remember in those first games. I do remember going to see the Hawks play the Warriors, and we sat in the old Coliseum. We would sit kind of behind the basket. I remember being like, it was a lot of rows back, and it wasn't that steep, so it wasn't always the easiest to see as a kid. But then soon after that, they became a pretty tough ticket for a long time. So I remember even through high school and college. I remember in college, I would just the first day that tickets became available, I would go online as soon as they started selling individual game tickets, and I'd just buy tickets to every game that I was going to be home over Christmas break for. Mm-hmm. And in the old, before they renovated the arena, it was just one level all the way up. And we'd be in that back row, and it was awesome. You could stand up. There was a curtain behind you. But that was the thing about the Warriors. It didn't matter how good they were. They were always jam-packed, and the crowd was always crazy. And, the Bay Area has multiple teams in each sport except basketball. It's just the one team. So I was just hooked. I remember when I was a kid, whoever the Warriors had, I thought was, the best. I mean, I loved all basketball. So I loved Isaiah Thomas and Dr. J, people like that. But there was nothing like the Warriors. You just never thought the Warriors were going to be as good as those teams, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea of them winning a championship was crazy. But it was a big, I remember not even childhood, but people are always like, oh, I remember where I was when JFK was shot. I'm like, fuck, I remember where I was when... Like Warriors events, right? Like yeah. I remember when Tim Hardaway tore his knee up. I was working in Santa Barbara. I was an intern at a TV station, so my job was to move the teleprompter forward, and I would always skip forward to the sports section and just read it before the broadcast started. And I went through, and it's like Tim Hardaway. I'm like, what the fuck? No, I couldn't even function. Couldn't do my job. I remember when they drafted Weber. I was in my apartment in Santa Barbara, and I can still picture it, like just as clear as those buttons. I was running around the apartment, high-fiving the doorways, And even when they traded like Ronnie Cicely or Billy Owens for Ronnie Cicely, which seemed to be the missing piece, right? The Warriors never had a big guy. I remember I pulled over to the side of the road in San Diego because I was so excited when I heard it on the radio, just sitting in my car going, yes! And I liked Billy Owens, but it just felt like, you know, it was all that. I mean, in the year that they had Weber and they got swept by the Suns in the playoffs, but you were just positive, like, oh, this is like just the start of a championship era.
My little brother cried after that. I remember that. We were listening.
After that series?
We didn't have a TV in my old house, but so we listened to the games on Spanish radio. And after they got knocked out, he stopped being a fan of the Warriors after that because he was so heartbroken over the loss. I remember that vividly over my living room.
I remember you were bummed because you thought anything was possible that year, but then you were like, it didn't even matter because it was like, dude, this is year one. Just think about what's about to happen. And then obviously it all kind of fell apart from there. But I even remember that. I remember they traded Weber to the Bullets for Tom Gugliotta. And then, like, I remember the first game back, Gugliotta dunked in the traffic, and you're like, yeah, we're going to win. We're still going to win with Tom Gugliotta.
So then after all this, you know, growing up loving the Warriors, going back to getting Zappos started, when you started buying advertising, how excited were you when an opportunity where you needed to advertise for Zappos and you were able to purchase some time?
For Zappos, we needed to play some ads to attract brands. And the first thing I thought of was like the Warriors. I want to be a Warriors sponsor. I just want the tickets. I want to fucking say I want to have some connection with the Warriors. That's really all I care about. So we had our logo on the scorers table.
What's the process to get that? You just call it in or somebody?
At that point, it was, you know, a lot easier, right? You reached out said, yeah. Hey, I have a crazy story from that process. So I called the Warriors, and this was when Zappos was just starting. So we were in the little office. We were still Shoe Site. We hadn't quite converted. We were about to convert to Zappos, but we were in this office. We were in the still in our first little office. And at the time, you know, the Warriors weren't getting a whole bunch of inbound sponsorship inquiries, right? So I called up or I emailed, whatever it was I did, and I got a call back from a guy, I think his name was Robert Schiller, and he was in charge of sponsorships. And he's like, well, haven't heard of your company. Let me come check out. Let me come over to your offices. And, you know, I probably wanted to come take a look, make sure that we were actually a real company.
So there's a little bit of a vetting process.
There was, yeah. I think there's a much bigger vetting process now. But at this point, there was a little vetting process. So he comes over to our office. Again, this is the converted apartment, which is just a dump. And he comes over, and I remember sitting in my office, and there's two things I can picture from that office. One was sitting at my desk the day that VentureFrog said they'd invest the $500K. And the other one I can still picture perfectly is sitting at my desk and looking at him, and he was staring out the window. So outside my window, there below us was like a single-story garage with a flat roof, like this gravel roof on top, and it was right outside my window. And he was looking out the window, and he said, have you looked out the window? And mind you, I'm like nervous. I'm a company. I'm trying to spend money with the Golden State Warriors, right? This is the VP of sponsorships or business development, whatever he is. I said, I mean, yeah, I've looked out the window. He goes, have you seen what's on the roof? And I'm like, no, what's on the roof? There's a giant black dildo on your roof. I'm like, wait, this meeting is going horribly. Wait, what did you say? It definitely was an icebreaker. So I walk over to the window.
It was
like
a huge icebreaker.
I'm like, oh my god, you're right. But I'm thinking, hey, this is kind of funny and crazy, and he thinks it's kind of funny. But I'm also thinking, is this impressing the Golden State Warriors? So I call down my buddy Billy, who was the guy that left to go drive his van around. I'm like, Billy, get that! You got to get something off the roof. So he runs around, and he jumps on top of the roof, or climbs up on top of the roof, and we're looking at him out the window, and he's got like a plastic bag. He's like, "What do I do with it?" And there's like some bushes or weeds in the corner. Yeah. Just put it in the bushes or the weeds. And all of a sudden, so inside the garage was a business where there was a young guy that would repaint furniture, right? So he'd take old furniture and he'd just repaint it. And so I'm not sure why I repeated that, but he comes running out and he goes, hey, get off my roof. What the fuck? And I still remember Billy in front of the Warriors VP of business development going, dude, there's a fucking dildo on your roof. Trying to get it off.
Trying to get it off.
Yeah. So anyways, so we've gotten sidetracked. But that was my first business meeting with the Golden State Warriors, which
No one has that story, by the way.
I'm sure they didn't forget.
I went back to speak to the staff at the Warriors once a few years ago. They invited me to talk about Zappos and other experiences, and I was like, well, you know, the first interaction I had. So I got a lot of confused looks in the room, but overall they laughed. And I mean, it was a crazy thing, but it was it's another example for me of how, like, the Warriors have always been this, like, theme, right? My wife's always said earlier, she'd always tell me, if you would just spend as much time thinking about your business as you would the Warriors, your businesses would probably be a lot bigger, right? And I was like, well, is there a business I could do with the Warriors?
Yes, there is, by the way.
But yeah.
Answer to that question.
Yeah. So that was the first relationship, was with Zappos. And then a little while after, at the end of that season, they invited me, the old team president at the time, his name was Robert Rowell, and the owner was Chris Cohan. And they were not the most beloved owners. I mean, at that point, the Warriors were loved by Bay Area fans, mm-hmm. but seen as, you know, kind of them and the Clippers were kind of like the
bottom of the barrel
as far as franchises go. And they invited me to come and speak to potential sponsors about my experience. And I obviously went and said, there is nothing I'd rather do than sponsor the Warriors. And it was true. It wasn't logical, but it was like, you know, you can't pick what you're interested in. For me, I've always just loved the Warriors. And so, but then I went to a game the next year, and they had this new ticket pack they were going to sell where it was like a 10-game pack, but you pick your games. It was some confusing thing. And then, but they wouldn't mail you the plan in advance. You had to come on the first day and pick up your tickets. So we get there for opening day, and the line is crazy. And they weren't very organized. And I was like, we're in this line. Everyone's trying to pick up these tickets. Everyone's trying to figure out, like, why couldn't we just get these a while ago? And so we missed the first quarter, right? So you're just fuming because you're like, season opener. I think they're playing the Toronto Raptors. I think they probably had Vince Carter at the time. It was like a, you know, exciting game.
Yeah.
And you're like, you can't get in. So I remember I was so furious, missed like at least a quarter of the game, maybe half the game, that I wrote a letter to Chris Cohan and Robert Rowell. And I said, listen, dude, I was your biggest proponent. We sponsored the team last year. I came and spoke to your future potential sponsors.
Yeah.
And like, this process of buying this and then getting the tickets and now waiting in line and missing a game has been insane. And like, you know, Zappos was, you know, at this, we're kind of focused on customer service. And I said, you know, we're building a company that really a big focus for us is customer service. And I'm just kind of disappointed. I just wanted to let you know about this. And also, you know, I don't even know what the point of it was. My friends called it my Jerry Maguire. Yeah, my Jerry Maguire letter. It was like a 3-page letter.
Manifesto.
Right? Yeah, and they never replied. But at the end of that letter, I said, and, you know, what's even more important to me is I hope that one day I'll be able to be owner or part owner of the Warriors.
Yeah.
So this team really means a lot to me. That's why I'm writing you this much, right? Which was a crazy thing to say in probably the year 2000. Like, I probably had like $100 or, you know, I don't know, whatever the fuck, I had.
Just one day you'll be there.
But I just threw it out there just because it was like, I thought it would make my point or whatever it was, or maybe I was hoping that one day that letter would make sense. So it was interesting because I guess it was about 10 years later, I had the opportunity to go to a meeting where I might have the opportunity to be part of the Warriors ownership group.
Yeah.
And I took that letter with me.
Were you still involved though with, how did you end up getting that meeting? Like, were you still involved as a sponsor with the Warriors, or were you?
No, so we did the 1 year. Sorry. Mm-hmm. We did the 1 year as a sponsor. And that was, we also sponsored the Giants, and that was back when we were, for Zappos, just trying to attract brands. So we just wanted something flashy that we could point to a specific time or TV station and say, look, that's where we are. We're spending money. We're going to make it. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't necessarily leading to sales. It wasn't the most effective advertising if you were actually just trying to convert one customer after the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we did, at the end of the first year, we'd start to make traction with brands. We didn't need to do those things anymore. So we stopped doing it. And then it was, so I guess it was probably at some point in 2009,
so this is like 9 years.
Yeah, Chris Cohan had decided he was going to sell the team. And so I was like, holy shit, like, I wonder if there's a way I could be part of this, right? And mm-hmm. and I was at the games, that was before. I knew a guy who told me once in a meeting, this guy, his name was Guy, in LA, and he told me, we were talking about something else, and he said, "Oh, I know the guy that started 24 Hour Fitness." I don't remember what we were talking about, but I just for some reason remembered that. And I saw a newspaper article that said, here are the people bidding on the Warriors, right? Everyone thought Larry Ellison was going to be the guy that got it because he said, "I want it." He's uber rich, and everyone's local like, ties. He's probably going to get it.
So what's the process when you're bidding on it? So is it you're just buying smaller percentages of the team? Is that what it
no,
is?
No. This is when he said, "I'm going to sell the team."
Okay.
So there's multiple people that are putting their name in the hat saying, "I want to buy the team. I want to buy the
They're
team.
Just putting
I
want to buy the team. They're just
putting okay. together groups.
Yeah. And so the newspaper had kind of done a little summary of like, these are the groups we're aware of. And it was like, Larry Ellison. I don't think any group needed it. It's just Larry Ellison. And then there was like Mark Mastroff, founder of 24 Hour Fitness. And I was like, wait a minute. I think Guy said he knew the guy from 24 Hour Fitness, right? So I hadn't talked to him in a little bit, but I emailed him and I was like, "Hey, did you tell me you knew the founder of 24 Hour Fitness?" And he's like, "Yeah, Mark Mastroff." I'm like, "Can you introduce me? Because I just read that he's buying the Warriors. And I want to see if I can somehow get in there." And he wrote back like, "Haha." I was like, "No, I'm serious." Like, fucking. He wrote back, "You're serious?" I said, "Yeah." And then I don't know what happened. I don't know. He either didn't reach out or I never heard back. But then it was eventually announced that a group led by Joe Lacob was going to get the team. Which was everyone was surprised because everyone had assumed that Larry Ellison was going to get the team. So I was talking to my financial advisor, Chris, and I was saying, fuck, I was hoping Mastroff would get it because I thought I might have a in there where I could somehow get involved. And he's like, "You really want to get involved with the Warriors?" And I was like, "Dude, there's nothing I would rather do." Like, the fuck? No, that would be fuck like Zappos. That's like my ultimate dream, right? And so he was like, whatever. So then he calls me back and he says, "Hey, I don't remember how long later, maybe a few days later." And he's like, "Hey, turns out that I know a guy that is using an attorney or we're using an attorney that also knows the attorney or something that's working on part of the deal for that group."
Yeah.
He said he can make the introduction if you want. I was like, "Of course I want that." Like, yes, set up that introduction. So he sets up the introduction. I get an email back from, I guess, probably the investment banker that was putting the deal together for Joe. And so I had a meeting, and it was at whatever the golf course is on Sand Hill Road. Can't remember the name of the golf course, but it was at the country club.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh shit, now I have a meeting. Like, I don't know. I always thought I don't belong. I mean, I've been to plenty of meetings on Sand Hill Road trying to raise money for Zappos.
And did you wear your suit?
No, but my still overall experience with that road is everyone tells me no, other than Sequoia, who we've been to meetings there, and a lot of those are board meetings, and we're getting beat up. So yeah. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to go on that. That road is not full of good news for me. And then I looked at the thing, and I'm like, what's the dress code? It's like, collar required. I'm like, yeah, fuck, here we go again. If I go in this meeting with a suit, I'm just going to, I can't do this. But I think eventually I bought a new polo shirt. So I had a short sleeve collared shirt.
You don't have a tuxedo t-shirt?
Compromise.
The classics.
Compromise.
I probably changed out of that in the car. And I had some khakis. And I went in there, and I had my letter. I had the letter that I had written to Chris Cohan. And I was ready. Like, I went in that meeting with a pitch of why you should let me be part of this and somehow, because I really didn't understand how it was going to work. Mm-hmm. And then I got in there, I was all nervous, and it was Joe and the banker guy, and they were very nice. I'd never met them. I wasn't familiar with either of them. And said, "Okay, well, let's go through this presentation." And I was like, wait a minute. I thought I was the one giving a fucking presentation. Like, and I was like, oh, wait, because they're, yes, I never thought about this. They're
pitching you.
Raising money. Right, yeah. So they're pitching in potential investors. So all of a sudden, I always thought of myself as a super fan that had somehow swindled a meeting to try to, convince someone to let me be part of this. And then I realized, oh no, they have a presentation because they're raising money. So they did the presentation, and then, basically I'm in. I'm like, what about this letter? Can I show you my guys my letter? And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, well, I said okay. So I left a meeting, and I called my financial advisor.
So right then and there, you became partner.
No. At that point, I just said, okay, hey, it sounds great. I'd love to be part of this, blah, blah, yeah. blah. But no, it wasn't really like a are you in type thing.
Yeah.
And so I left and I called my financial advisor and he's like, how'd that go? And he's hoping that didn't go very well, right? Because he doesn't want me to do this. Yeah. Called my dad and it's like, what do you want to invest in the Warriors for? It's like a vanity thing. You're not really into that stuff. I'm like, dude, it's the fucking Warriors. Like, God. So
what was their record at that time?
what, in that time?
At this point, they're pretty bad.
They're pretty bad.
Yeah. And they haven't, they hadn't made the playoffs since. So, no, they made the playoffs in 2007, and then they fell off, right? So they made the playoffs in 93. They made the playoffs in 2007.
Yeah, but
with the We Believe team.
Yeah, but this meeting was happening before then, right?
No, no, it's We Believe and then. So this is 2009.
Oh, okay.
So they had the We Believe team. So they'd had some success, but then they've dismantled that team as quickly as they could. And so now they're back to struggling. Because that was like a two-year thing, right?
That's true.
Baron Davis, they traded Jason Richards and all that.
So no wonder your financial advisor didn't want to.
It didn't seem, I mean, it didn't seem like the greatest investment in the world. I mean, it's, you know, you have the statistics that sports historically, I think there was a statistic that sports historically had appreciated 7% a year or something like that. It was always a steady increase in franchise valuations. But my financial advisor and my dad were both like, it's a vanity investment. Do you need to do this? Do you want to do this? And I'm like, I have to do this if there's a way for me to do this. So they, you know, I mean, it's my decision ultimately, but they, like, we did it. And so I said, I'm in. If you'll have me, I still, you know, they finally, all right, yeah, you're in. I was like, shit, this is unbelievable, right? So I,
what was that party like for you?
That I was like, it was the same thing as raising the money at Venture Frogs, where I thought I was a billionaire. This was just like, holy shit. I mean, my mind, right? I'm thinking like, I'm probably suiting up for games. I'm probably in the locker room high-fiving people.
Coaching.
I'm probably just fucking, you know, dancing on the floor with the cheerleaders. Like, I'm doing the whole thing. Like, I'm part of the Warriors. No, it was awesome. I was like so excited. I wasn't sure investment-wise if it was a good idea or not, but I just thought, like, you know, it was something that I would always regret not doing. So that was it. So once I officially became part of it, I didn't have any responsibility, right? The way the group's set up, you have basically one main owner, which was Joe, and then there was Peter Gruber, who was kind of like the second main owner, and then there was you know, a small group of us that were made up the rest. And we have no, you don't really have any say, you don't have any responsibilities, you know? It's kind of up to the main owners to decide how included the minority investors are gonna be in the overall anything.
Is that probably one of the more common misconceptions that, you know, common folks have in terms of, now you're an owner of the team, you're expecting this, you know, huge amount of responsibility, but it's more like investing as opposed to really owning a team.
Yeah. It's really just investing. I don't, and for some reason in sports it's called owning, but it, you know, they have the ownership group instead of the investor group and the primary owner. But I've always kind of felt like maybe the main owner should be called, maybe he could be the owner, but I think like the rest of us should be called like minority investors or maybe investors in the ownership group.
Yeah.
You know, because I think because I basically still see myself as like that 15-year-old kid that's like so excited to be at the arena. It's always, it's not something I've been comfortable with. I've never been like, oh, I'm one of the, I'm part of the ownership group or I'm one of the owners. I kind of just try to, you know, if I have a badge, if I have my lanyard of the game, I'll flip it backwards. Or if, but anyways, yeah, so the season starts and I'm like, wow, this is my first season of, as what'll be different? And I get a badge and I have, all of a sudden I get to park in the same parking lot the players park in, and you get to go in through a certain door, and there's a room called the Bridge Club, which is a club just for, mostly for members of the ownership group. So it's like, oh, this is pretty awesome. So they give us these, it was all rushed, it was put together pretty quickly before the first season.
How was it?
Like the deal closed right before, so it was like, here's your badges, here's this, that, and the other. And it was hilarious, because I would like, I remember Buddy Millar and I'm like, I got these passes into the Bridge Club, or the owner's room, whatever they want to call it. He's like, oh, let's go check it out. And we'd go to the door, and they'd be like, nah, man, you need a pass to get in here. We'd be like, got a pass right here. And they would just look at us, look at the pass. And I still remember the one guy being like, I don't know how the fuck you guys got these passes, but go ahead, go inside. So we'd go inside. But it was new. Everyone was new, so you didn't really know a lot of people. You know, I was intimidated because I just felt like the kid that had somehow snuck into the ownership room.
Right? Yeah.
So. But over the years, you get to know everyone. It became, that room became a lot of fun, and you know, develop friendships. You go on trips. You do all these things. So it became much more social. But the first year was just kind of more like sneaking around, being like, "Oh, this is crazy." But I had a clothing brand, Dethrone, which now my brother Dan has. And so we'd sponsored a bunch of MMA fighters. And this time the Warriors are still looking for ways to drive attendance, right? And mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think of more ways to do something with the Warriors. So back then, the good news of being a bad team was you could do stuff. Like, we put on MMA night. And so they set aside like a section of tickets, and we brought like 8 fighters in, like, you know, Cain Velasquez, Gilbert Melendez. We brought DC in, Koscheck, Nick and Nate Diaz, all these guys. Actually, Nick didn't show up, but Nate showed up. And so fans bought a ticket. They got a special Dethroned Warriors t-shirt and a poster, and then they got an autograph.
Yeah.
And I remember they were like, I don't know if this is going to work, but there was a line around the concourse before the game. So it was really fun.
So it gave you a lot of creative freedom to try different things since the team wasn't doing so well.
Yeah. Yeah, you could try things. I think I went back into a sponsorship meeting. I had another project I was working on called Gymga, which might even have been the year before, but that was like this fitness video app that I worked on with my buddy James. And we would basically create these workouts, and then we would film athletes doing them. And the idea was people at home could log in and subscribe and do the workouts. So we did a deal with the Warriors where we got Monte Ellis. So Monte Ellis, who was my favorite Warrior at the time, was like, we go into the Warriors practice facility, and he's looking like, what do I got to do? Because the Warriors had included it, you know, as part of this deal.
Yeah.
And so they, his trainer, John, was like, well, you just got to put you through a little bit of a workout here. And they called him Sip, I remember, because he's from Mississippi. So he'd be like, come on, Sip. And Monte was like, super nice guy, but he's like, just finished practice and just finished working out. And it's like, all right, do this, do that, do this. And this time it was more, we had kind of given him general parameters, and his trainer was putting him through what he thought would be a good workout. But there's always crazy things like that with the Warriors where I always just, I can't even remember half of them, where I found myself like, oh, I want to try this, I want to try that.
How was it when the Warriors started winning? How was it that for those few years when it was building up?
When they started winning is interesting because, you know, so my responsibilities, I didn't have any responsibilities. The only thing they asked me to help with my first year was merch.
Yeah.
Because the year before that, they had actually, the previous owner had applied to transition the uniforms from, the Warriors had always worn blue and gold, mm-hmm. right? And then at some point, I'm not sure if it was in the late 80s, early 90s, they had transitioned to, actually, no, it was mid-90s. They transitioned to these like navy and orange uniforms because the old owner and team president said, we have to switch our colors. The reason we're not selling much merch is because nobody wants to wear bright blue and yellow, which is funny now, right? The whole world is wearing bright blue and yellow. And so they had switched to these. They had made Thunder the new mascot, and they had switched to these navy and orange uniforms, which reminds me, when I was moving back from San Diego before I applied at Silicon Graphics, I had actually applied at the Warriors for a job at the scorer's table.
Yeah.
And I tried to, like, keeping stats. I didn't get hired. But I remember a guy showing me their new mascot. It was called Berserker. And I'm like, what the hell is it? And he's like, it's nothing. It's a cross between every animal possible. I was like, this is the craziest
like
mascot I've ever seen.
Yeah. Fountain.
So that thing didn't last. It was the worst mascot. I remember, like, miss dunks, and it would get booed by the crowd the whole time. But they asked me to help with merch because the year before, the old owners had a plan to go back to the royal and gold uniforms, mm-hmm. but they hadn't submitted it in time or something. So they had a whole season where they had nothing in the arena stores, and I'm like, even today I'm still the same kid that walks in the store looking for something new.
Yeah.
So we had created these posters, and we said let's have like some commemorative posters from games. And. And I still remember on Mullen retirement night when we made a poster for that. And then it seems like a long time ago now, but Joe, the owner, got booed because he had just traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut.
That's one of his more infamous nights.
Yeah, and the crowd basically booed him off the floor. Like, it was really uncomfortable and awkward. Like, so it wasn't like something where the team got bought and it was like, oh, this is going to be a big success and smooth sailing from here. It was like, the crowd was like pissed.
Yeah.
And they thought this was going backwards and you just traded away the favorite player. But, you know, as the moves started to pan out and, you know, obviously they had some great drafts with Draymond and Clay. And then you've got obviously Curry getting healthy and evolving. There's probably never been a player that's gone from how he played his first year to like just escalate every year to like now just, you know, possibly the best player in the world, or at least one of, definitely one of the 3 or 4 best players in the world. It's crazy. So now it's, you know, even more of a frenzy. But the thing about the Warriors is they always had that crowd support and they always had the sellouts. Now they're just a worldwide phenomenon.
Come in.
Oh, shit.
Well, never a dull moment here. Speaking of Warriors, so we got a surprise visit. Well, we knew he was visiting at some point. We just didn't know now. By another member of the Warriors investor group, Chad Hurley.
Hello.
I think we got another episode coming up after this, too. He's going to make a cameo on this one. So I just told my 30-minute story. And Chad and I met through the Warriors. He was also part of the group. So how did you, it's perfect timing, how did you end up as part of the group?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to listen to this podcast after this to hear your story. But my brief story of getting involved with the Warriors involved knowing Peter Gruber, basically. I spoke at his class. He teaches a class down at UCLA. And we always had stayed in touch and talked about the value and the future of sports and media. And we shared the same beliefs. It's going to be something we want to do something together in the future. And he reached out to me one time. He said, hey, we're going to try to pull off this this Warriors deal. And I had also been involved with a Formula One team at one point in my life.
Formula One.
yeah, that wasn't the best investment in the world, but it did lead me to also, in a roundabout way, meeting Joe, who collects cars, and he lived across the street from me in Atherton. So not only knowing Peter, Joe as well reached out to me, and he was still involved with the Celtics at the time. So we went down, I think it was game two of the finals when they were playing the Lakers. And we all flew down to talk about the potential of this Warrior deal going down.
Yeah.
And that was at the time when everyone thought that Larry Ellison was the one that was destined to get the team.
Yeah.
So Joe was able to work his magic, and I just kind of jumped on board because of it. Just kind of right place at the right time.
So I remember, Joe was a minority investor in the Celtics before the Warriors. And I remember, what do I remember?
Do they edit these shows?
I remember. what the fuck? Oh, we didn't introduce Chad either. What the fuck? Oh. So Joe was a minority investor in the Celtics prior to becoming the primary owner of the Warriors. So you had a much more recruited story than I had. I basically had to beg my way into the group. And you were in on this process the whole way.
Yeah, they're really trying to pull me into this thing.
This is crazy. You guys went out to Boston or you went to?
We went to LA. I flew down to LA.
I went to one of those games. I went to the game where the Celtics made like the biggest comeback in finals history. I don't know if it was the same one.
I don't think it was game two because I was pretty sure they lost that game. But anyway,
nice. So were you a big basketball fan? Like, did you? What were your expectations coming into it?
Yeah, I mean, I was just a sports fan in general. Growing up outside of Philadelphia, big Eagles fan.
Has to plug the Eagles.
Congratulations.
Go Birds. You know, we got to enjoy this year. It doesn't happen too often. So as defending champions, we're very happy about that. But just growing up at Philadelphia, you know, we're big sports fans. Followed the Eagles, was into the Sixers. But really kind of my involvement, being part of YouTube and media in general, like I said, I mean, I just thought sports in general, you can't replicate a live event, that sports were going to retain value as something I'd want to get involved with, just in terms of an investment perspective.
Yeah. Being part of YouTube means being the founder of YouTube, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A minor role in YouTube.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into in the next episode.
Yes.
Do you remember when you first went to Warriors games as part of the group? Like, did you feel like a big shot? Were you walking around just like bumping people out of the way? Did you think you were going to be on the court with the players?
Yeah. Well, let's see. When was the first game? Or who was the previous owner again? What was his name?
Chris Gohan.
Yeah. Chris. So we did buy some courtside seats. I think it was right next to like the visitor's bench, you know, that corner where people sit next to the bench.
Yeah.
I think that's where we were sitting. And at that game that we went to, yeah, went back to talk to Chris and stuff back in the you know, now known as the owner's room that we got to. At the time, it wasn't all fancy and everything. It was like a cement room. But so that was the kind of my first experience. I forget who they were playing exactly at the time, but it was one of the twins who played at Stanford, who's now the coach.
Oh, the Collins twins?
Yeah, one of the Collins twins. I remember talking to him.
He was on Utah and Phoenix, maybe, or were they? Or Utah and Brooklyn?
I just remember talking to them, or one of them, whoever it was. they're during the game. They're sitting next to me, and I was kind of like, you know, kind of giving them a hard time. Like, why aren't you in the game? Why aren't you playing more? Just assuming, you know, he should be on the floor, but, you know, you have to play for that.
Yeah. No, I think the fun thing for us has been, at least speak to myself, actually, Chad's funny. Every time there's an event, so it's up to the majority owner how included they want to keep the minority investors, right? They could, in theory, they don't have to really bring anyone into the loop, and they could just do whatever they want and not make any decisions.
Yeah.
Joe's been great with like a regular schedule of meetings, like before the draft, which the draft isn't as exciting now, but back in the day, you'd get to go the day before and you'd meet with he'd have Bob Myers and Jerry West answering questions. I remember still asking Jerry West a question just to hear myself ask Jerry West a question, you know, and thinking this is the coolest shit that Jerry West.
What type of questions would you ask him?
I think I just, like, you know, had, like anyone on Twitter, right? I had some player that I was like, what do you think about this player? And, you know, they just give you that, not a bad player. Actually, a cool thing, we were in the Bridge Club one day, and I got there way too early, so I bought a little mini hoop, and I was trying to teach my son Luke how to catch it. I'm just throwing at him, it's hitting him in the chest. And he's like, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, throwing at him, it's hitting him in the chest. I'm like, fuck. And then Jerry West walked in, and no one else was really there, and it was like kind of a... It was just kind of awkward, right? We're just kind of sitting there, and there's not much going on. Jerry was just kind of standing there, and I'm like, "Hey, Jerry, any tips on how to teach this guy to catch?" And he's like, "I sure can." So he comes over, and he's like, "You know, what's your name?" And he's like, "Luke." He's like, "All right, listen, you're going. You know, you got your hands like this. When the ball's, I want you to put your hands like this, and when the ball comes, squeeze in the middle." So I throw one to him, and he catches it. He's all, like, lights up, and I'm like, what the fuck? I throw another one, and he catches it.
So I was calling him Dad.
And
I'm like,
and then Jerry West's like, all right, little fellow. He calls him Dad. He's like, I'll see you later. So he walks off. And I'm like, fucking Jerry West just taught you how to catch. You have no idea, like, how cool this is.
Yeah.
So I still remember then Jerry West later was talking to Joe, and I'm like, Luke, go over there right now. Tap that guy on the shin or the knee and be like, can I take a picture? So he, I didn't want to bug him. So he did. And so he has a picture. It's pretty cool of Jerry West, like holding him when he's holding that ball.
When
you get older, you're going to be pretty stoked that Jerry West taught you how to catch. Yeah.
Do you usually send Luke out to take pictures?
Yeah, I'm a pussy when it comes to asking.
When he's being drafted, that you can show that photo.
Yeah.
This is where it all started.
How did this happen? The logo taught me. But no, I mean, Chad can chime in. So we get an inside view of the organization and the different things and how, I mean, it's been amazing how the group's been able to raise all the revenue streams and go from being kind of the, what'd you call us, Julio? The
bottom of the barrel.
Bottom of the barrel to now it's like, the Warriors are like the standard in almost every revenue category, which is amazing. But Chad might, seeing as he got recruited into the group, but I don't do anything. You know, I just go and enjoy it and feel lucky to be in those meetings. Have you played any significant role?
Oh, yeah. I'm behind the scenes. I'm doing everything. No, I'm not doing a damn thing. Just as much as you.
Actually, we showed up one day. They said, hey, I got an email that said, hey, could you come tomorrow? We're having a business of basketball meeting with the team. Could you come and talk? It's like, I can talk. You know, I don't know about what, but I'm in. So we show up to the practice facility. And then I see Chad there. I'm like, you know what we're doing? Remember this?
Yeah,
I remember. He's like, I don't know. What are we talking about? I go, I don't know. They just asked us to come.
It's sort of like this podcast, actually.
Yeah.
Just show up. I don't know. Figure it out.
So all the players are there, and there's a bunch of chairs set out in little groups. And then Peter Guber starts giving this speech, and he's just, you know, a great speaker, and he's just on and on, getting them all fired up about how back in the day, you know, when I was sitting in the crowd, Magic Johnson would run down the court and we became friends and now we've worked on these teams and now we own the Dodgers together and you guys are in Silicon Valley and, you know, he's telling the players, like, you need to take advantage of the people around you and people in the ownership group and all the companies around you and really, you know, you can really do a lot for yourself later in life. It's like, okay. So then they split us into groups and they're like, all right, just go talk to each group. like, talk about what? So I don't know. I don't know what Chad talked about.
I don't know. I remember talking to Draymond Green about some playlist idea that he had. Because it wasn't only just telling our story, like our business story and backgrounds chat, and stuff. Right? It was just to get in a little circle and talk to some of the players. And he was asking me about, he had these ideas around, you know, how do you create a business around music where, you know, you could subscribe to playlists of the music of athletes or celebrities and all these other things. It's an idea he said he had since college, you know. Since then, that was before he really broke out. You know, he's done a lot better since then, just as a player, but, you know, getting involved with everything else. But it was just interesting to hear insights from the players as well. I mean, you know, it does obviously extend beyond the basketball court in terms of what they're interested in and their aspirations and what they want to do. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it was awesome. I mean, because it was, mind you, like, we're, at least for me, I'm sitting here, I'm supposed to be the one, you guys need any business guidance? Like, what do you know? But really, I'm just in super fan mode thinking, wow, this is pretty sweet. I remember Clay Thompson's like, so how did you think of Zappos? And I gave the answer. And it was kind of like, well, Chad's sitting over here giving lessons. I'm just sitting here like, and then someone's like, I remember someone asked for ideas of how they could connect with fans more. And I remember Maurice Spates saying, maybe we could, like, sometimes we could call season ticket holders and thank them and get on the phones. And then there was just silence, and all the players looked at him like, what the fuck? We're jumping on the phones calling the players.
Yeah, I don't even know if the players were that excited about this business day. It was sort of like mandated by the league.
Thing they had to do.
And they're just sort of sitting there like, you know, we have to do this because we're obligated to. Yeah. Like, we want to be here.
But they got I got all fired up in Peter's speech about, like, you can develop these relationships. We can be working on projects with these players. And then, like, the next day we get an email saying, hey, just so you guys are all aware, per league regulations, no one in the ownership group is allowed to have any kind of business relationship with any player on the team. And I remember being like, what's the point? I think I saw Chad at a game, and I was like, did you see that email? And he's like, yeah, what the hell? So we just got all excited. I think I left that meeting thinking, like, oh, I'm going to start 12 businesses with 12 players.
How's that this different than any other day that, you know, you're thinking of something when you wake up?
It's been fun. So it's a lot of that. But, like, you know, so it's been an awesome experience with them sharing stuff. But yeah, that's kind of what it's like, how to get involved, how we ended up getting involved, and then what it's kind of been like. It's been awesome. I mean, it's basically a super fan's dream.
So how actually do you make money, like, once you invest? Like, what's the return on something like this?
You don't. You just keep buying more tickets.
Just keep buying
more merch.
It's a scam.
It's a Ponzi scheme.
No, I mean, people ask sometimes, they're like, so do you get a percentage of revenue, or do you get a, you know, but, like, in theory, I guess you could get a distribution every once in a while, but the Warriors, at least building this huge arena, all the money gets reinvested back into that. Really, it's a long-term thing, right?
Yeah.
If the team were ever sold, our equity would be worth more.
Yeah, I mean, you're just investing in the team. You know, at the time when we invested, it was, you know, a record price for a basketball team. You know, obviously, the Warriors has done really well, but the league in general has done well as well. And so it just continues to rise. So, I mean, the exit strategy at some point in the future, you have to decide when you don't want to keep buying tickets and you want to sell. You know, you make money both ways. You stop buying tickets and you sell your equity.
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny. The ticket prices are getting so high that it's almost like an additional investment every year.
Yeah, it's a wash. We're just paying for equity, just pays.
Paying for the right. Yeah. But the... like, so selling the team, like, that's not something that would go to a vote. That's just something if one day Joe and Peter, I guess, would said, hey, we're going to sell the team. And they would just tell us, we're selling the team. Here's how much we're selling it for. As a minority investor, you obviously have the option to sell your stake.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now it's...
Why would anyone want to leave right now?
Yeah, it was more like a lifelong dream and, like, the, you know, the most fun thing you could do, so... But no, it's been a great experience, and if anyone is, you know, looking to invest in a NBA team in the future, you've got to either write a Jerry Maguire letter like I did.
That's true.
Or you've got to be a big shot like Chad and get recruited.
Yeah, recruited, drafted.
There's two paths.
Yeah, I was drafted.
Yeah, I was the walk-on. He was the first round pick, and I was the walk-on. So, and now we got Chad in here. I think we're going to have to... have another episode
yep.
focusing on Chad.
Oh, great.
Yes.
He's perfect. Ready for that. He seems to like the mic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a natural.
So.
Well, this wraps up episode two,
I yep. guess. Yep. Yeah. Episode two in the books. You can obviously follow us at the Startup Addict on Instagram.
Yes.
Startup. I was wrong last time. It's actually startup_addict.
Oh, really?
On Twitter. Yeah. The website is thestartupaddict.
Give someone some extra followers.
Yes.
That's where they went.
That's where they all went. Yeah, and on YouTube as well, we're at... We will be at YouTube.
Maybe somebody can
Slash. Better get on that.
Yeah, Chad can pull some strings here. Julio's blocked from YouTube based on some past behavior, but we're going to try to rectify that today.
So that plugs.
Anyways, appreciate you listening. If you get a chance, please subscribe. It helps us in the rankings. If you want to give us a review, that'd be awesome too. And we'll keep pushing out episodes.
All right. Till next one.